It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In Wisconsin, each year, hundreds of babies die before reaching their first birthday. And sudden infant death syndrome is one of the leading causes. That's from March of Dimes and its most recent state figures from 2020. We discuss the latest research on SIDS, and you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question or share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Kristen Seaborg is a pediatric neurologist at UW Health Kids and an assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Seaborg, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Are there warning signs that an infant may be at risk for SIDS?
You know, there aren't warning signs, but we've been able to identify multiple risk factors that increase a child's risk for SIDS. For instance, if a baby is born prematurely or they have a low birth weight, they're at higher risk. Or if there's a prenatal or postnatal smoke exposure, they're at higher risk for SIDS. And also if there's a history of maternal alcohol or drug use, they're at higher risk. But most importantly, and things we can modify, is if a child has an unsafe sleep environment or what we would consider unsafe, such as co-sleeping or prone positioning at night, or having a lot of pillows around the baby while they're sleeping, can increase their risk for sudden death.
Co-sleeping, so having that infant in bed with you, what are the hazards there?
So unfortunately, when we're asleep, often adults will move around a lot. And if there's a small child next to you, it's possible to roll over onto the child or to move a blanket or a pillow that was in your portion of the bed into their space, or worse, obstructing their airway or near their airway.
When you look at the risk with smoking in the home, what is the link there and the risk of SIDS and air quality?
So it's hard to define specifically what exactly increases the risk, but certainly the air quality that an infant is exposed to in a home with where there are smokers can impact their ability to maintain normal oxygenation and normal breathing at night. There are also some unidentified or unable to discern risks with increased ear infections for parents or for children of parents that are smokers, and anything that increases upper airway secretions can increase a baby's risk of SIDS.
There is a new study in the National Library of Medicine saying there could be a link between SIDS and fever-related seizures. What is your reaction to the research?
This is a big article and really has gotten a lot of press in the neurology world. First, I just want to clarify. So this study is looking at both SIDS, but actually more importantly, a different phenomenon called sudden unexpected death in toddlers. So this study looked at 300 children that had died between the ages of 1 and 5 with no known identifying features, or it was a sudden unexpected death. And while they did show that there was a slightly increased risk of a history of febrile seizures in these children, the same amount of children had an increased history or had a current history of a upper respiratory tract infection. And all of the children that were looked at in this study were found in a prone or on their stomach position when they had their death at night.
Okay. So in terms of fevers, though, how common are fevers among infants?
Fevers are crazy common. They're a normal reaction or a normal way that a child's body can fight infection. So we do not think it's the fever itself that's dangerous. We think that's actually our body's way of fixing the infection. But there are probably some factors that we need to identify in addition to the increased upper respiratory secretions that can place them at increased risk of sudden unexpected death.
And would the research be different for infants that haven't reached the age of 1 versus babies and toddlers who are between 1 and 5?
The difference in the research is the sheer volume of the numbers. So we estimate yearly like 3,000 children die unexpectedly under the age of 18, but 92% of these are infants and 8% are between the ages of 1 and 5. So it's hard to do research on that small number, but it's such an impactful population that we'd like to learn more about.
We're talking about sudden infant death syndrome with Dr. Kristen Seaborg, who is a pediatric neurologist at UW Health Kids. You can be part of the conversation. Call in with the question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Seaborg, the National Institutes of Health says breastfeeding may help reduce the risk of SIDS. What can you tell us there?
Absolutely. So breastfeeding decreases the risk of SIDS because the positive antibodies that the mother is able to confer onto their child can decrease the risk of respiratory infections and help overall their immune system. Also, sometimes pacifiers and breastfeeding use in the middle of the night opens a child's airway and then decreases the risk of asphyxiation while they're asleep.
What about, we talked about bed sharing, but what about sharing a room with that infant? Does that have any effect on the risk of SIDS?
Sharing a room with an infant, we consider as a pediatric group, completely safe. Decreasing the risk of SIDS, hasn't been proven yet in the literature. But if a family would really like to be close to their infant at night, we definitely recommend room sharing over bed sharing.
Room sharing over bed sharing. So how can the parents and caregivers ensure safe sleep practices for their infant?
So making sure they're a safe environment or they're sleeping in a safe environment, which would mean a child would be in a supine or on their back position in a crib or a bassinet with no pillows or stuffed toys around them or anything that they could get onto their face. And then either sleeping in the same room or sleeping in their own crib with a baby monitor, just audio monitor is enough to be able to hear the baby at night and make sure that they are safe.
How do you keep the baby warm, though, but, you know, not too warm for sleep?
The great thing about children is they have the ability to auto-regulate and maintain their normal body temperature. Sleep sacks are safe, or just the onesies with footies are safe. But we really recommend avoiding blankets and really kind of fluffy pillows around them because that can increase their risk of SIDS.
And, you know, after some weeks, our little infants will start to roll over. And, you know, as a mom, I've always was concerned, like, when is it okay for them to be on their tummies?
Sure. If they are strong enough to get to their tummy, then they are okay. Which is very different than you putting them on their tummy, but if they're strong enough to get to their tummy, they can lift their head up and they can also roll back if they need to. So at that time in their life, it's okay. Still, you need to avoid the pillows and the fuzzies and the stuffies in the crib, but it's okay to let them get themselves to a prone position.
Okay. And so you would put them down on their back, but you walk in a little later or when they're asleep and you find them on their stomach, that you don't have to like roll them back over and put them on their back.
No, you do not. You can leave them like that.
Or, you know, when I had twins and they weren't supposed to be rolling over, but all of a sudden I walked in and like one was literally almost on top of the other. I'm like, oh, someone's learned to roll over.
Yes. So, and that's where you can't spend all night re-rolling over the child, right?
Because
you
both need to. So, you know, as you look at the new research coming out and in your field of neurology specifically, what might be some new aspects to explore with SIDS with the brain and neurology?
So that's an excellent question. This study is landmark because not only did they look at the children that were older than age one, but they had seven children in their cohort of 300 that were actually being video monitored when, like, at the time of death. And they had independent researchers go through and look at these videos, and they feel conclusively that six of the seven children had convulsive events around the time or at the time of their death, which raised the question of if seizures are causing their death or if they are having a seizure as they become hypoxic or have low blood flow. This in the neurology world really brings us kind of to this continuum between unexplained sudden death and a phenomenon we call SUDEP, or sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. These are both syndromes where patients or children have sudden unexpected death we can't 100% explain. But both areas need a large amount of further research so we can further decrease the chance of sudden death in children, especially children with epilepsy.
In the meantime, Dr. Seaborg, how should a parent or caregiver be caring for that seizing infant?
In the meantime, the best thing you can do for a child with epilepsy, and I'll answer the other part in a second, is make sure they get their medications, make sure they have a safe sleep environment, and ensure as much as you can that they get adequate sleep. In a child with a history of febrile seizures or who doesn't have a history of epilepsy at all, then the advice goes back to what we were just talking about. Just make sure they're in a safe sleep environment and that they're, if we can, not being exposed to any external smoke or anything else that might make their environment unsafe, such as co-sleeping.
Pediatric neurologist Kristen Seaborg bringing us the latest on sudden infant death syndrome and neurological complications in infants and children with this new study. Call in with the question. You can add your perspective at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine potential causes of sudden infant death syndrome and the latest research on the unforeseen and unexplained death of a baby younger than one. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. Share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Dr. Kristen Seaborg with us, a pediatric neurologist at UW Health Kids. Let's go to Catherine in Milwaukee. Catherine, hi. What is your question?
Hi. I'm just wondering, how is this being communicated to the broader community of expectant parents, even caregivers, really? Is there an initiative by certain agencies? Just wanting to know, how's the word getting out about best practices?
Sure. So do you mean the most recent research about potential increased risk for children with seizures?
That, or just in general, this topic in general. I'm not a parent, but I have a great nephew who's expecting. And so I'm, you know, my antenna is up for all of this information.
So for the risks of SIDS, which is the sudden infant death syndrome for children under the age of one, the American Academy of Pediatrics, or www.aap.org, has a wonderful webpage and very in-breadth knowledge about SIDS and ways you can prevent SIDS. For older children greater than age one, for sudden unexpected death, our cohort and our research is very small. So the study that I'm referencing today looked at 300 children, and we don't have enough information to change the guidelines, the recommendations, but we are focusing on more research in this population. There is a sudden unexpected death in children, or SUDC, research group that you can also reference on the internet for most recent guidance and recommendations.
I wonder, is SIDS a topic for prenatal visits or follow-up care after that baby is born?
Often. It's mentioned in the hospital after the baby is born. It's mentioned at the early well-child visits. It's a very common topic that is discussed routinely.
How do you approach counseling parents who've experienced the loss of a child due to SIDS?
Goodness, empathy and understanding. There's absolutely no way to cast any blame or, say you should have done this. There is a slightly increased risk of SIDS in another child in the future, just because we're concerned there's a small genetic correlation. However, our counseling is just more for support and to make sure that the family is aware of safe sleep practices and decreasing their exposures to things like smoke in the home.
You know, technology and artificial intelligence, it's all around us, Dr. Seaborg. Mm-hmm. How could technology help prevent a situation like this?
We don't know how it can prevent yet, but we do know how it can detect, or at least make us more prone to capturing a child when they're in a risky situation. As I'm sure you're aware, there are a lot of video monitors that we can place in an infant's room. A lot of them are motion and sound detected. These are, in my opinion, somewhat a double-edged sword because a child moves multiple times in the middle of the night. If you're getting woken up every single time, it's harder to respond when something's really going on.
Right.
The market is actually, there's a lot of research, and we're getting closer to developing peer-reviewed and approved seizure detection devices that children with epilepsy can wear at night. None of these yet are FDA approved, but there's a lot of research on the technology that would be able to detect a seizure before it happens or while it's happening in a child in the middle of the night.
So it seems that the medical side of the research and the technology side are also converging here to try to figure out a path forward for how to prevent these sudden deaths.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse for a parent or a family to experience a sudden unexpected death. So we are trying our hardest from multiple avenues to attack this and prevent it as much as we can.
What are some common misconceptions surrounding SIDS?
I think there's a lot of common misconception about even if I put a blanket or a pillow in my child's crib, they'll be just fine. As I'm sure you're aware, in the community, the evidence of co-sleeping is unequivocal that it can place an increased risk of SIDS. But a lot of families are concerned that if they're not co-sleeping, they won't be close enough to their child in order to detect other things. So I think we need to continue to attack those misunderstandings or those misconceptions to get our children to sleep in a safe environment outside of their parents' bed.
And in that crib, you know, it's not just the blankets and the stuffies or a pillow soft thing. It's also like those crib bumpers that tie at the
Yes.
corners. Those too
Yes.
can be, I understand, quite harmful.
They're super cute, right?
They
But
are. Yeah. They
yeah.
go with the decor of the
I know,
room.
but unfortunately, yes, they can be quite harmful. And then I've heard too, families will say, but what if they get their head right next to the railing on the crib that could hurt them? And you know, they'll move away from that. And even if they did have a bruise on their forehead, sure, that's much less risky than asphyxiation or losing your breathing or breathing at night. So we'd go over safety over cuteness of the bedroom.
And those cribs also, the cribs have to certainly be up to code as well as to how wide those slats are. There are certainly regulations around that. So as long as that crib is, I would imagine, a more current model, that there wouldn't be a concern there.
Correct. Current model, there are very, very strict regulations. And so I would have an up-to-date crib that's made within the last 10 to 20 years at most.
You know, it does the age of either parent have an impact on the risk of SIDS? Is there any research on in that area?
There's no research that I can find. The only kind of correlation but causation I could potentially discern is there's a slightly increased risk of prematurity in younger moms, and we know that prematurity is associated with a higher SIDS risk. So perhaps we could correlate those two things, but I can't prove that younger age of parents is associated with higher risk of SIDS.
Dr. Kristen Seaborg with us as we talk about sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS. Dr. Seaborg is a pediatric neurologist at UW Health Kids. You can call in with questions and comments along the way at 800-642-1234. Dr. Seaborg, this is also quite sensitive, but detecting the cause of death to be SIDS, what does that entail?
It's actually a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning we've excluded everything else before we call it sudden unexplained infant death. So what that usually entails is autopsy, sampling, looking for genetic differences that predispose a child to having sudden death, cardiac differences that could cause a sudden arrhythmia. And often we look at brain samples to see if there's anything different about a brain that would make a child more prone to sudden death. So it's not a pretty diagnosis, but unfortunately, that's often the way that things pursue before a child is diagnosed with that.
Is there an ability to learn a lot more about SIDS through autopsies?
We're working on that to take these brain samples or pathology samples and look a little bit closer. There's actually some ongoing studies right now. I have one in front of me. Pathologists looking at the tissues in the cells and trying to determine if there's something different that makes a child prone to SIDS.
That's really interesting. Where do you see SIDS research headed, you know, especially in terms of your specialty?
I think it would be really, so the most recent study that looked at the videos of these 7 children that died suddenly can give us a lot of information that's happening around the time of death. It's impossible for us to predict when SIDS or sudden unexpected death in children will happen, but I think it would be helpful to have more video or EEG data for children at risk of SIDS or sudden unexpected death. And perhaps that way we can figure out the kind of the consistent things that we see in these children and identify their risks.
But it's also, you have to balance that with an infant doesn't want to be hooked up to monitors while they're trying to sleep and rest, because we also know that infant sleep is so important. So you want to advance the science, and yet you don't want to let these babies sleep.
And you have completely identified at least part of the kind of barrier that we have to doing research on children like this. That, and really nobody wants to, it's hard to research sudden infant death once the child has passed. So it's a very tricky area to research, but you're absolutely right. It's hard to do research on young children.
We only have a few seconds left, but how important is sleep to infants?
It is imperative for infants to have safe and effective sleep. It can affect their development and can affect their daytime function and their ability to learn and grow throughout the day.
Dr. Seaborg, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing the latest on this topic. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Kristen Seaborg is a pediatric neurologist at UW Health Kids and an assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can visit our program page to stream or download more programs from The Morning Show. Visit wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.